tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I got over it. Oh, man. Sometimes, you know they say hold a mirror up to yourself? Because you're supposed to learn psychologically, spiritually, hold a mirror up to yourself. I was out with a couple of buddies yesterday. We're sitting there. It was kind of a sports restaurant, and he points to a couple of old guys sitting across from them, from us. He says, see that over there? He says, that's us in 15 years. I looked at him, I looked over there, and I said, that's a mirror. That's us now. Good to have you with me. That's why I have, as Dave Vacheres is so fond of saying in his talks, I have a face for radio. Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. Let me get this set up here. I have to press these bookmarks here. It'll decide. The computer decides when it wants. It's amazing. There's nothing like a computer to make you feel dumb. The number to get onto the program 877-573-7825. This is a call-in program. Interestingly enough, I can't figure out a way to keep the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of publicists and human resource people from writing me with their idea of a guest. You're my idea of a guest. I want to tell them this. Leave me alone. I got the people I talk to on the program who call in. And they don't need a publicist. They just need themselves. And they want to talk about something that matters to them in their lives or in somebody else's life. Or to give somebody some help. The number, if you'd like to get onto the program, to ask a question about some circumstances. There is no limit, really. We don't have too many calls that we say, no, that's really not a topic for this program. Because this program is focused on life, from conception all the way out to eternity. You know, I saw a meme the other day, classic. It says, if you don't believe that life begins at conception, but you do believe that masks are absolutely necessary, then you're not believing in science. You're believing in ideology. Maybe some truth to that. Number to get onto the program. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. I'm a psychologist. I was at the office this morning. Good Lord permit me to be at the office tomorrow. Meeting some really, really nice people. That's one of the great advantages of having done this for a while. You can sort of pick and choose who you're going to see. When I was at the mental health centers for those many, many years, pretty much anybody who came in the door was assigned to one of us. And I've had children who, well, I don't want to say what they did to their parents, but it was, how shall we say, final. I'll euphemize it in case you have any kids listening. So pretty much whatever came in the door, we were assigned intakes. Well, now, one of the advantages, I can select. And I select on the basis of people that I think will be cooperative and workable and helpful. That's at the office. Now, here on the radio, don't do therapy. Don't do diagnosis. And certainly will not second guess or intrude upon what another therapist is telling you. I may not agree with necessarily, but I'm not. That's not my point to step into that. 877-573-7825 is the number to call to get out of the program. Before I go to the opening monologue, just a little backdrop information. Yesterday I talked, every so often I will offer some thoughts on the whole COVID response, and as more and more people are coming to see reality and the way this is being handled, the way it's being reacted to as the months and months unfold. Interestingly enough, and I made the observation that never do I get more negative email than when I've touched upon that, which is kind of interesting. I think it touches into the fear component, because there are a lot of things we talk about on this program that you would think would get people irate. If somebody calls in with a particular circumstance and I give a suggestion or a thought, and that is totally 180 degrees out of phase with what you experienced in your own personal life, or if, for example, we talk about something very, very culturally, powerfully related, like abortion, well, you would think that people would write you. They don't. No, but this COVID thing, they have. And I made the observation that, I get a few people accuse me of not being Christian or not understanding or not being sensitive. Well, I got a boatload of emails yesterday. Every single one, now this tells me something, every single one was supportive and grateful. Some of them were just going, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. There was one that said, the statistics still make me skittish. So I wrote her back and I said, okay, here's the statistics in your state. Here's the number of deaths. Here's the population in your state. Here's the odds of someone dying of COVID in your state. It was 0.0005. And I said, and of course, this is not contextualized. This is across the board. I said, if you're under 60, under 70, that number is way less than that. But anyway, and I made the observation that it must be that people are getting sick of this. People are starting to react. Little by little, reality is starting to trickle in. Because 2 months ago, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, when I talked like that, it was a mix. Now it was universal. Thank you. I needed to hear that. Thank you. Yes, that's what I think. That's what I'm experiencing. That's what I see in the data. And by the way, just a thought. I'm going to let it go after this because I got to get into my opening monologue, which is also related to fear. study came out from the CDC. It's just the first. And you can always take one study and go, yeah, it's one study. It needs to be replicated, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't mean anything. You know what it said? Masks don't make any difference. The majority of people who get COVID get it not from walking through a grocery store, but from friends and relatives that they have close contact with, which is what you would expect. There's a survey done, this was months ago, back in New York, where they said that 85% of people, as best they could figure out who got COVID, got it from somebody close to them, somebody they live with, somebody they have close contact with. That makes total sense with a virus. Okay, enough of that. End of story. Probably 20, 30, 40 years ago, I started writing some books talking about, as a matter of fact, my very first book was called You're a Better Parent Than You Think. Talking about how psychological correctness, the idea that there are certain psychologically correct ways to handle everything in life, and my particular bent at that time was everything in parenting, and how that was truly undercutting parents' self-confidence, their authority, breeding enormous amount of second-guessing and guilt, something that I never saw growing up. And in fact, I never really saw quite as much of in my very earliest days of psychology, but it seemed to gain a horrific momentum. I think there's been a bit of an evolution. Psychological correctness is still a phenomenon that undercuts parents' confidence, authority, peace of mind. It's still there. What if I'm handling this wrong according to the expert's ideas? We've become very much an expert-driven society, i.e. witness COVID. Well, now there's a new one that I think has kind of entered the scene, and it's gaining a lot of momentum, and it's a momentum gainer among people who listen to this program. Faith-filled people who want to raise good kids. It's fear. What if my kid rejects what I'm trying to teach him? What if my standards are too out of line with cultural standards? What if I don't give my kid a smartphone and he's 15 and every single one of his friends has one? I'm standing out here all alone on the outskirts. What if I miscalculate in putting my standards where I want them to be as a faith-filled Christian parent who is trying to protect my child from the onslaught of the culture's misshaping, soul misshaping, amoral assaults. What if I try to stop some of that when they're friends or not? And then, what if I blow it? But see, the problem with that is, how will you know you blew it? If your kid leaves the faith? If your kid gets resentful? If your relationship with your child is now becoming a little tenuous? How will you know you blew it? By being a parent with standards, you blew it? See, the difference between the way the culture wants to raise your child and the way you want to raise your child is dramatic. It's absolutely a gaping chasm. And as the culture deteriorates, you are more out of step. What you're trying to teach your child in the way of virtue, in the way of religion, in the way of protecting his or her innocence. Notice how I say his or her, just being sensitive, pronoun sensitive. The gap is huge. And in that gap, many parents are now second-guessing their parenting, not because they're worried about being psychologically incorrect, but because they're afraid. They're scared. I tell parents, you can't parent in fear. You know why? Because when you parent in fear, you become tentative. You become unsure of yourself. You lose confidence. You lose authority. And you risk bringing about the very things you feared. If your children go astray in some way, if they reject the way they were raised, if they reject the faith you tried to teach them, let it be because they had to go over top of you. Let it not be because you compromise the very things that mean the most to you out of fear that you are too far out of step with the way the culture says your children should now be raised. 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. I'm Dr. Ray. Want to hear from you. Thank you so much.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up.
What can I say? I'm thrilled.
Don't go anywhere.
Your faith is important to you. You've carried it with you through the years, growing closer to God every day. You can't imagine life without your faith, and Henry Ford Village wouldn't have it any other way. Henry Ford Village Senior Living Community in Dearborn features a large, beautiful chapel with Sunday Mass each week, a 24/7 tabernacle, and a full-time Catholic minister on staff. Close to church, closer to faith, and it's only the beginning. Call 877-796-3458 to schedule your personalized Henry Ford Village visit today.
Is the ecclesial ministry of the Catholic Church personal as well as sacramental and collegial in character? The Catechism says yes. Jesus Christ, the founder of the Catholic Church, calls his ministers personally when he says, "Follow me." The College of Bishops are related to the Pontiff in Rome as Peter was related to the rest of the apostles. When Christ instituted the 12 apostles, he constituted them in a college or permanent assembly at the head of which he placed Peter, the rock of his church. Our Lord gave Peter the keys to his church, designating him the shepherd of the whole flock. The power Christ gave Peter to loose and to bind was also given to the College of the Apostles, united to its head. This pastoral office of Peter and the other apostles belongs to the church's very foundation and is continued by the bishops under the primacy of the Pope. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Thank you.
Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarindi. The program. The doctor is in. 877-573-7825. If you have a question about some circumstance in your life, comment regarding someone, yourself usually, but much of the time it is to deal with a frustrating person. And it always scares me when I look at somebody else as frustrated, you know, because I always ask myself, am I the frustrated one in somebody else's eyes? I always look at that as like, oh gosh, if I think somebody else is difficult and I think somebody else is frustrating and somebody else is irritating, well, just by definition, somebody's got to be thinking of me that way. All right, before we go to your calls, this is from Karen. She says, this is kind of typical of what I got yesterday in response to the COVID monologue. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Your monologue was, and I'm not going to say it because I'm in training for the Humility Award. I can't say it. I have a personal reflection on this topic. My 88-year young mother-in-law lives with us. She is in hospice, but she still enjoys going for car rides and going shopping. She wears her mask, but the rest of the family does not. Hugs, kisses, hand-holding are standard practice in our home, given by her and by us. The other day, my mother-in-law mentioned she, quote, could not smell very good the food she was eating. I asked her, here's the question. I asked her how long this problem had been going on. She said, for years. I told her that losing your sense of smell was one of the symptoms for COVID. She said, is everything a symptom of COVID? thanks, Karen. Appreciate that very much. Speaking of which, this piggybacks on the monologue that I just said, and this is so very common among this age, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Kevin calling from Illinois as a 17-year-old son who has just decided, well, Dad just needs to be rejected. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Dr. Ray. God bless. Love you. Love your show.
Thanks.
17-year-old son, strong Catholic faith. I wish I could take credit for it. I mean, we've been going to church forever. We're divorced, his mom and I, and I have residential custody. He's lived with me. We've been joined together since the hip, since kids. And now he's decided to live with his mom. I'm blocked on his phone. I got no conversation. I don't know what's going on. He's planning on going to Christendom College in the fall. I wish I could tell you what I did wrong. I wish I could tell you I beat him up or did something, and I don't know what to do. I really don't. He won't respond to emails. I have no way to contact him. Everything's being done by his mom.
What does she say? Did she give you any explanation?
Oh, she's admitted that she's turned him against me.
Oh, so in the sense of you saying I don't know what's going on, you just said I do know what's going on.
Yeah, my apologies. I don't know what she said to him or, you know, outside of that. So he moved in with her. I mean, he sleeps on the couch. He lost his car. He ignored me on Father's Day. I mean, just really, I can't tell you how much I'm hurt. I just can't.
Well, let me help out. I hope.
Please.
I hope. I think that it goes beyond your boy's mother telling him that you're poison. I think it goes beyond that. I think she has decided to let him have all kinds of freedom that you haven't let him have, and that she's convinced him that her way of doing it is much more understanding of what a 17-year-old should get.
Well, I mean, it goes along the lines of what most people are telling me. Even my priest, I've talked to him, you know, big time about it. I'm doing novenas to heal our relationship, everything. There's nothing I can do. He says it's out of my control, the priest. You can only control what you can control.
Well, I'm going to give you the good news. You ready?
I'm ready, Dr. Rick.
All right. when a kid decides, well, I'm going to go live with the other parent. And I'm going to go live with the other parent because the other parent is much, 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 much easier to live with because I get what I want. I have freedom. My dad was a bit of a religious freako. And along with his parenting, he's a little too restrictive for my blood. And my mom, she thinks he's nuts. And she is on my side. Now, I would just guess that's the dynamic. But here's the good news. I've seen over and over again that in time, when you have that kind of a permissive parent who has tried to poison one of the children toward their other parent, it doesn't work out for them. The kids start to see reality. The kids start to see in time who the parent is that they can count on, who they can rely upon, who is the more mature parent, who is the more faithful parent. And in time, if I was a betting man, Kevin, I'd say your son's going to come back around. I've seen it a lot. Your ex-wife can't be permissive and toxically free with him without that relationship having its own stress points. So given that, what I would suggest is that you still keep up contact, still text him every so often, say you're praying for him, you're thinking about him, hope he's doing well, hope things are going well at school. You know, don't try to guilt him back toward you. Don't try to say, you know, son, I don't know what happened. You know, I hope we can get together and all that kind of stuff. I would leave that stuff go. He's going to find out on his own where is the more mature parent. Now, that's what I think's going to happen. So it's going to be patient on your part. And you said, you know, how bad it hurts. For the moment, you are estranged. But he is 17 years old. And he is far from being able to look at things maturely. And he's far from being able to judge which parent has his well-being most maturely at heart. So give that a little time. I would also say this. You laid down a beautiful base, and if he is going to Christendom College, you hope he's going to have that base solidified, and he will see that, yes, what I'm doing to Dad is wrong. Mom is misleading me, and I'm seeing it. There you go, Kevin.
Thanks, Doctor. God bless, and I agree with you about COVID. It's insane. Insanity. You can't believe the numbers. I have a police friend for the state of Belize. If they get killed in a car accident and they have COVID, it's a COVID death. So yeah. You can't believe the numbers.
I know. It's happening everywhere. Kevin, thank you, sir. I appreciate you. Call back anytime. And call me back if and when he comes back and says, hey, Dad, I want to be back with you. Because I think that's going to happen if I was a betting man. If we were playing nickel-dime poker, I'm not betting to the inside straight. I'm betting for trips. Trips are better to open. Thank you, Kevin. All right, let me mark that down, because there was a lot there I wanted to say about that. So that's a look-back call. 11, Illinois, 17-year-old son. Okay, got it. This is Dr. Ray, 877-573-7825. I would love to hear from you. Come on, we'll get you in here. Get your calls in here. You talk to Eric first. I know that's climbing the ladder. You got to be nice to Eric. And then you and I will talk. 877-57-EQUAL. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Thanks for joining me. The doctor's in. Interestingly, and I've said this before, kind of reflects our previous call, and it does reflect calls coming up. This is one sign of a culture's deterioration. It is a huge sign of a culture's deterioration, which is the younger generation turning against the older generation, turning against their parents, turning against the way they were raised, taking their lives and making a mess out of them. Absolutely. Well, by the way, I got some more details on that study that came out, that it was college students, one of every four college students who had in the previous month seriously considered suicide. How about that, huh? Is that a sign of pathology in our culture and the way we're running things? So on one hand, we've got these adversarial, resisting, rejecting their parents, and on the other hand, they're miserable. God's law, it works if you don't follow it. Let's see what we got here. Let's go to Mike, Cincinnati, Ohio. He's got a 19-year-old son who Mike thinks using the word addicted to video games. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
Does he live with you?
Yes. No, he's in college. He's got an apartment.
I see. Who's paying for college?
Well, we saved a little money for him, but he knows it's his responsibility.
Is this interfering with his grades?
No, I don't think so. In fact, he did go out and get a job.
So why do you think he's quote-unquote addicted?
He spends a lot of time. When he was in high school, he'd spend hours in the basement playing video games.
Mike, now you just said something interesting here. You said when he was in high school, he spent hours in the basement playing video games. Where was Dad?
Dad was trying to coerce him to go bike riding or canoeing or something.
You weren't trying to coerce him, Dad. You were trying to persuade him.
Yes.
If you were trying to coerce him, you would have done things to make the video games not possible to be played.
Well, that's a good point.
And does that relate to something I talked about in my monologue, which is, as a parent, you're afraid to take that kind of action for fear of his reaction?
Probably, but I think more so it's just my own laziness to not create, not enforce it.
Okay. Well, you've sort of got the sequelae. Meaning
yes.
The results, which is he away at school?
Yeah, he lives here in Cincinnati, but he's, okay. 20 minutes from home.
So imagine with him living on his own and paying tuition, he's probably taking out loans, right?
He's got one loan so far.
Okay. Well, good news, bad news.
Okay.
The bad news is you really can't do a thing about him playing video games. He's out on his own. What are you going to do? The good news is, I don't know financially how you're involved in all this, but you could have conditions. You can say, if I'm helping you pay tuition and you've dropped out of two classes or you've got a D in a class because of your attachment to the video game, then I can't pay for you anymore. You could do that.
Well, and Dr. Ray, he's responsible for his college. My concern is his mental health. I'm concerned that it could be affecting. He's exhibited some anxiety. He had a panic attack this year and ended up in the hospital. Well, the doctors seem to think he was having trouble breathing, and so I don't know if that could contribute to his mental health.
Well, probably is. It probably is, Mike, but you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
He's out of your sight. He's out of your mind in terms of control. You can't do anything about it. I suppose you could continue to keep bringing it up. I don't know what that'll do. I think all that'll do is just strain the relationship.
Well, he said, he finally admitted that he is a little anxious. I'm more concerned. I don't care that he plays video games. And, he's 19. But, I'm just concerned that it's going to harm him mentally and
emotionally. It's a fair concern. That is a fair concern.
Okay.
But the question is, that's not the question. The question is, I'm concerned, can I do anything about it? How?
Right.
How? He doesn't live with you. He's paying for his own college. He's a young, kind of misguided in this area, adult.
Yeah.
So part of us, for, you know, part of it for parents, it's such a struggle for parents to say, I did my best in raising him. He's making some real bad decisions. These decisions are hurting him, but he is not at all interested in any kind of guidance from me. That's really hard for parents to accept that.
I agree, yes.
Because all not so long ago, you were raising him.
Yeah.
And again, and I've said this, you know, countless times on this program, this is not a farm in 1880. This culture is absolutely treacherous to the soul, to the well-being of people. And that age group is absolutely awash in anxiety and depression. Absolutely.
Dr. Ray, can this lead to, like, agoraphobia?
Sure.
Okay. Sure. I mean, just by isolating yourself in front of a screen, okay.
Yeah. No, it doesn't happen all that much. It's kind of
right.
Uncommon. But
right.
I think that the as long as the video games so far are not interfering with his job,
okay,
his sleeping and his grades, then somehow he's managing. Even though he's probably putting in extra hours in front of that screen, he's managing to balance it all out. Yeah,
okay.
So far.
Okay.
Now, if he tells you he's anxious, here's what I would say. I'd say, so why do you think you're anxious? What's going on? You tell me how you size it up. You don't tell him. Don't you say, well, you know, I think, son, you're anxious because you're playing too much time. No, he'll shut you down. You get him to explain why this is happening in his life.
Well, what you're saying is the anxiety is not coming from the video games, but he's using the video games. I mean, that's what I hear you say. He's using the video games to help his anxiety. Is that possible?
I don't know.
Okay.
The anxiety could be coming from a whole bunch of other things. No idea.
Okay.
I don't know how much social media he's on. Social media is terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And it just does incredible damage. So we'll see. We'll see exactly what he's doing. Thanks, Mike. Talk to you. This is Dr. Ray. That music is starting here in a few seconds. A lot of calls up there, so I want to get to you. Yeah, I know, Mary. I cannot tell you how many people are telling me this. This is, well, I don't want to say horrible. That's an overstatement, but it's ugly. It's ugly. Short of keeping your mouth shut on some of this stuff, we'll see. I'll see what I can come up with. I got 2 minutes. More than I need.
Thank you for what you do. You are a prophet. You deserve a prophet. And God bless you, Dr. Ray.
I don't know what I want more of, you know, to being a prophet or to make a profit. Not really sure. Dr. Ray Grandy, thanks for joining me here. All righty. This is something I'm hearing from a lot of people, and to be straight, my experience has been I am hearing this from people who have what would be considered traditional viewpoints, whether it's traditional morality, traditional, what is called conservative political views, right-leaning views, these are the ones who are telling me the most that they are being assaulted. I don't see this as equal from both directions. This has nothing to do with my own particular leanings. It has to do with what I observe and who comes to me. and I am seeing this of an incredible intolerance and hostility from those very folks who, well, they wear their supposed tolerance as a badge. Hey, Mary, how are you?
Hi. Hi, Dr. Ray. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Can you hear me okay?
You go ahead, dear. I'm not going to yell at you for your own political views.
Okay, so I just feel like I've been getting attacked a lot lately from people that have different political views than I do. And the other thing is people that I've considered friends and good Catholic people are, you know, have no consideration for, you know, life. And that I don't understand. And I don't, and even though, you know, I might say, well, I'm pro-life, like, I really don't want to hear it. Like, they keep coming back at me and attacking me over this stuff. To the point where yesterday my blood pressure was up. A good friend of mine who is, you know, religious, and I mean, he's been being attacked, and it's just been, like, how do you deal with this stuff? I mean, I almost want to just not even bother with these people because I just feel like they're very ruthless to feel that life doesn't matter. And that it's okay to attack somebody that's trying to do good. And it's okay to believe in all these lies that are being told. So how do you deal with that in the real world? Because, I mean, it's very hard. It's very hard to maintain friendships even because you realize that these people are not good people.
Well, you can't maintain friendships if they're hostile to you. There's not a whole lot you can do to keep that friendship going. However, what I have found to be most workable, I won't even say successful, I'll say workable, in people who are on the assault about what you believe about God, or what you believe about morality, what you believe about political perspective, I don't try to make the case of what I believe. I try to get them to defend what they believe. For example, someone who considers themselves a very devout Catholic, a very, very faithful Catholic, but yet they're going to say, I just believe that this particular perspective politically is okay. Ask them, how did they come to that conclusion? I'm not one issue voter. There's a lot of other issues. Okay. So what will you do with the church teaching that says, if you're a faithful Catholic and there is an option, a pro-life option, you are really obligated to vote for the pro-life option? In other words, ask them, is it a baby? Is it not a baby? When does it become a baby? How do you know it's not a baby? Just get them to explain to you. You're not arguing with them. I want to hear how you came to that conclusion. And what I find, Mary, and what you're going to find, they have not thought it through. They're thinking in shallow cliches. There isn't reason and logic behind what they're saying, which, of course, is all too often true. So you're not arguing with them. You are simply saying, I want to understand how you have the perspective you have. If they say, I hate our president, what do you hate about him? What is it about him? He's a racist. Okay, how did you come to that conclusion? On what basis? What has he done or said? Tell me. You look like you're really interested. You're not arguing. You're trying to understand. And then they will attempt to explain, and as they attempt to explain, they may sound foolish to themselves. Not most of the time, but every once in a while you might get someone. I had a friend one time who was attacking the Catholic Church. And as I asked him about his attacks, he just sounded like he got more and more violent in terms of his perspective. And I found out on the way home, he said to his wife, did I sound as stupid as I think I sounded? He's Catholic now, by the way. So every once in a while, you know, I enjoy engaging people who say they are deeply, devoutly religious, but it's okay to kill a baby as it's even coming out of the womb, as it's being born. And I will say, how is that? Tell me, please explain that to me. I want to understand. That's what I'll do, Mary. But in terms of the hostility of other people, you know what? It's sad. They're showing who they are. They're showing incredible intolerance. They are showing a lack of any kind of discourse and want to understand how you think the way you think. It's quite ugly. It is quite ugly. And I have my own thoughts on how this has all come about. And I truly believe the media has just absolutely whipped up hostility between the races, between the sexes, between religions, between secular versus faith-filled, and on and on and on. Thanks, Mary. Appreciate the call. This is Dr. A. I shall return in the words of Douglas MacArthur. Do you know who that is?
On the next Cresta in the Afternoon.
Confirmation hearings continue for Judge Amy Coney Barrett. All citizens who are asked to serve in public office deserve and should expect a fair hearing, one that explores the professional qualifications to serve and not merely the religious affiliation or personal philosophy. Has this been the case for Judge Barrett? We'll look at the hearings and the cost of being a faithful citizen.
Cresta in the Afternoon from 4 to 6 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
No doubt we are in a time of crisis, and I refer here not to the current declared pandemic, but to the constitutional crisis we are facing as a result. Unfortunately, once government officials yell pandemic in a crowded government theater, the public safety interest has taken precedent over the Bill of Rights and the public's liberty. While the fear engendered by war or a pandemic might lead politicians to assert that patent violations of the Constitution are not what they appear to be, and that even if they were what they appear to be, in these times of danger, the public safety interest demands an exception to our most fundamental liberties. History teaches they'll look back on these arguments as gravely wrong, overruled in the court of history and having no place in law under the Constitution. Indeed, the response to a pandemic or any emergency cannot be permitted to undermine our system of constitutional liberties or the system of checks and balances protecting those liberties. In the final analysis, there is no pandemic exception to the fundamental liberties guaranteed by the Constitution. Let us pray that we have more judges who understand their role as guardians of the Bill of Rights and who will not wait for history to conclude that these draconian restrictions imposed on our fundamental freedoms during this current pandemic have no place in law under the Constitution. I'm Robert Use, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Good to have you with me. Glad to have you here. The rule is, you're on the line at the end of the program, you're first up any future program. Kathleen, Ohio, has a difficult brother, and Kathleen is not nine. Kathleen has grown up. The brother is living with her and their mother, but he's difficult because he starts fights. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello. Hey,
there you go. Watch what you say. You're on the air. Be careful. Might not be able to protect you. Kathleen, you there, dear? Kathleen?
I'm trying to hear.
Oh. Can you hear now?
I can hear you, but it's very faint.
I tell you what, we're gonna let you call back. You must be struggling with something on your phone there. Dan from Spirit Catholic Radio, this is, oh boy, this is something I have addressed in numbers of my books. The right to privacy of a child, the right to privacy makes for, oh, questionable law, and it really makes for bad parenting. Hi, Dan, how are you?
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah,
what kind of privacy do they want?
Well, I don't see it really as privacy as much as just being left alone and isolating themselves and not being bothered.
When they isolate themselves, they take their phone with them?
Yeah.
So they're really not isolating themselves. They're preferring the phone world to you guys.
Yeah, I guess I don't know if they're watching movies and and listening to music, or if they're actually texting anybody.
So the bottom line is they're doing what, unfortunately, an enormous number of children now do, percentage of children, which is I would much rather immerse myself in the internet world, the social scene, and all the options that's available than to be anywhere near mom and dad.
Right. And I feel like, well, I can give them that some of the time, but I feel like I can't give them that all of the time. I'm not a good parent if I let them do that all of the time.
Okay, so then don't let them do that all the time. Is there a problem?
The problem is I don't like conflict, and is that just driving? Well, my wife says, well, that's just going to drive them away, and they're never going to come back home if you treat them that way.
See that? Oh, geez. I know you didn't hear my opening monologue, but you touched immediately upon it. If I'm a parent that sets limits and standards that I believe are healthy, all it's going to do is drive my children away, so I have to let them do whatever they want just in case they don't hate me.
Exactly.
That mindset is so wrong, I can't find the words for it. The irony is, Dan, if you surrender to what your children want, they simply say, I don't want to be around mom and dad, I just want to be in the phone world, always. The irony is, and this may not be what your wife realizes, you raise the chances of losing them much higher. So the question becomes, what will your wife do? If you say, look, your phone is available between this hour, and that's it. That's it. Will your wife say, I won't let you do that. They're going to hate us. They're going to resent us. They're going to run away from all we've tried to teach them. Is that what she'll say?
In a nutshell, yeah. She's going to say, you don't have the right to do that.
You don't have the right. What rights do you have then as a parent? Do you have the right to say you can't drive till you're 17? Do you have the right to say you have to eat your vegetables? Do you have the right to say you have to take a shower? Do you have the right to say you have to do your schoolwork? What rights do you have?
Well, and yeah, some of that conflict my wife and I have our own struggles, and that's a marriage
problem. And I'm going to tell you from a shrink what I've seen, and I don't think it'll make any difference to your wife. But I will tell you this. My office is filled with people who come in where one parent says, if you have standards, if you have conditions that you think you need to enforce for the good of the family and the good of the child, if you do that, you're going to ruin the relationship with the kid, and you're going to make friction in our relationship. And my experience has been, when that happens, almost always, in the end, it ends up ugly. The children end up resenting both parents. The children can't wait to get out of there, because mom and dad are at each other. And all of the stuff that the one parent would fear would happen, happens anyway. So, for what it's worth, that's been my experience. I don't think you'll convince your wife otherwise. I can only hope that as things unfold, she can see that this isn't good to allow them to simply retreat into their own little world endlessly. Because, Dan, I'll tell you, a very, very high percentage of the time, the world that they retreat into is very dangerous for them, for their well-being, for their souls, for their family relationships, for the maturity, and for their avoidance of anxiety and depression. Now, that's what I see. So if you're asking me how to convince your wife, I don't know how, because that mindset is now so instilled in so many parents. I guess what I could say is if you weren't tuned in at the top of the show, go to the Ave Maria Radio Archives for this date and listen to my opening monologue. The other book that I have that really directly addresses this is called Raising Upright Kids in an Upside-Down World. And I talk about all of the ways that parents are afraid to set these kinds of technological limits, social media limits, TV limits on our kids, and all the reasons why they think if they do, their kids will just run away from them. Go to my website, drray.com. Dan, it is there. Okie dokie. So, those of you who didn't get on, please, you call back. You shall be first up. And I'm telling you, That mindset is not... I'm getting this all the time. They're coming into my office. The spouses disagree. One spouse says, if you have limits, if you try to protect the children from themselves, they're going to hate us. They're going to rebel. They're going to resent us. They're going to run away when they get the first chance. So what then tends to happen is that the parents can't agree, and then the one spouse who gives much more freedom, which is generally not very healthy freedom, inevitably it ends up ugly. So keep that in mind. Alrighty, I gotta run. Walk with God. Walk with God. Put a little more trust in your instincts as a parent. Do not parent in fear. Ask God. Give me the backbone. Give me the spine. Not the parent in fear.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.